that weight I felt my whole life, you know, like so crazy, like because my dad struggled with like addiction and alcohol, like struggled like my whole life. So seeing that pain, I like understood it, but I didn't.
What is up, you guys? Welcome back to the number one mental health and addiction podcast, The Hopeaholics. I am your girl, Natalie Eva Marie, and these are my boys.
I'm Chad.
I'm at Shane Earn, baby.
Hell yeah. Brothers. Make sure you guys like, subscribe, and follow us on our socials and wherever you get your podcasts.
And remember, new episodes dropping every Tuesday and Friday. Check them out.
This episode is brought to you by The Infinity Group. You guys, if you or a loved one is suffering, please call us today. The number is right here on the screen. We are here for you 24/7. Now, let's get into the episode.
We're live.
We're live. All right. We're live.
Yeah. There we go.
Welcome, Jimmy, to the Hopeaholics podcast.
Like Jimmy Queen.
Jimmy Queen.
Yeah. Dude. It's like a detective name, you know, like the olden days.
Yeah, it is.
A sleuth.
Like Jimmy, you could actually be a TV, yeah. a TV name.
A T. Yes, exactly.
Jimmy a TV Queen. Investigator. Yeah. Jimmy Queen. Jimmy
Queen. Yeah. Yeah. There was Jimmy Bravo. I'm Jimmy. Jimmy Bravo.
It's funny. I get crap for it, like on Instagram, like random people. They're like, what's up with Queen? Why do you have Queen tattooed? I'm like, I don't know. It's my name. Yeah. Like it's in my Instagram handle and it's tattooed on like my chest. So I thought you guys could put it together, but maybe not, you know?
People probably think it's not your name.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you just made up a name.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe.
I think so.
Yeah, probably. But it does remind me of the, how I got into reading was James Patterson, and he has like the Murders Club and Alex Cross, so it's a total detective.
Yeah, Alex Cross. Alex Cross, yeah,
right,
same like Jimmy thing. Queen. Yeah.
So
you're like, on the case.
Yeah,
Jimmy Queen. We're calling Jimmy Queen. We gotta call Jimmy Queen. He's on the case.
Yes,
oh Jimmy,
I'm on the case.
He will solve this.
He will. Murder. Jimmy Queen will solve it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a new career, like
there you go.
Getting ready to go right now. Yeah. We're firing it off.
Yeah. Well, you have a good voice too, so you know we can do this.
Yeah, through the door.
We can
do
this.
Open the door.
Yeah. Open the door.
Yeah.
See? Come out flexing hard.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Straight from an arm pump.
Yeah.
Oh, we just fucking created a TV show in a matter of minutes.
Seconds.
Thank you, guys. I'll put you on retainer.
Can we get
or
like executive credit when it launches?
We could do like 50, 30, 25% or something. Figure it out.
So I know this. Like, I want to jump right into like, how in the fuck do you have a smoothie at Mother's Market?
Dude, I don't know. Super funny. I've been going to Mother's since I was a little kid. Like, they're the total OG of the health industry, at least where I'm from. Like,
yeah.
Before
where were you born?
Huntington.
Okay.
So I've been in Huntington my whole life. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My dad was always like into health foods, at least periodically he would be, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I would go to Mother's and they were always like the jam. They're right down the street from like the main house that I grew up in. So yeah. And then it was kind of funny, like we started doing the whole Instagram thing, like just this year, maybe December, kind of like started going, you know what, I'm gonna like throw some content out there, see how it goes, see how people react, whatever. And me and my wife always go to Mother's for like our breakfast date. And she was like, how funny would that be? Like if you got like a smoothie, shot them like a tag and like one thing. And they were like, hey, will you cook like a recipe for us? And I was like, yeah. Cooked a recipe. And they're like, dude, you want to do a smoothie? I was like, oh, we manifested this. You know what I mean? Like, this is so rad. And I've been making that same smoothie for 10 years, but I cut some stuff out so people wouldn't get like too scared, because I'd always go like egg whites and eggs. I'm like, people might get a little freaked out on that. Yeah. But we'll do the protein bomb, you know? So it was cool. People loved it. It was fun. Like, it brought like the community together. Like, I'm a huge fan of where I'm from. Like, I rep HB hard. I love HB. Mm-hmm. It's my city, you know? Yeah. Like, everyone that I love lives there. I'm proud. I'm proud to be from there. And Mother's is kind of like I said, like that OG side of the whole health department. So like collabing with them has just been like super fun.
Yeah.
Do you get like a little kickback from any sales or something?
Yeah, kind of. Like, okay, so cool. They, I mean, they kind of bro everybody out. So they're only charging like $7, which their smoothies are more than that. So they just, we worked out, they like kind of throw you a deal just up front. Like, yeah. I'm not like collecting on sales.
Sure.
I would have done it for free with them.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
You know, like honestly, when
especially in your hometown. That's
yeah. Great. When they told me about payment and stuff, I was like, honestly, like I only want to represent people that I care about. Like mm-hmm. nothing I'm going to do is going to come to money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? If some big corporate company was like, hey, we'll pay you this. Like, I don't even care.
Yeah.
Like mothers to me, it just has like part of my heart. So that's why I was so down to work with them.
Yeah. I have a funny story. So mothers is where I had my first date with my husband.
No way.
Yeah. So he was here yesterday and Jonathan was like, dude, you know that Jimmy Queen has a actual smoothie at Mothers. And then he's like, what? Now I need a shout out to Mothers so I can get a smoothie like the engagement. Because basically we met for the first time at it's not there anymore, but OCCF CrossFit gym.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that workout, then we went and had a smoothie.
Oh, rad.
And then after that little 2-hour conversation, he had texted me on the way home that he was gonna marry me. So now the smoothie.
Dude, you have to do something.
I know, right?
With them.
So now the smoothie's name, he titled it yesterday. He's like, the engagement.
Nice. The engagement.
Dude.
A pink smoothie.
So the smoothie already has a name.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll just text them when we leave here today. Say, hey, I got your next month's freaking smoothie influencer.
Yeah, you got,
go get
a smoothie
the Jimmy
influencer.
Queen and the engagement.
You got yeah.
I'll be dialed.
You got the Natalie Eva Marie.
But that's awesome.
Smoothie engagement.
And Mother's is such a, because I lived in Newport for a little bit.
Did you go to the Costa Mesa one?
Uh-huh.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
That one's huge.
It is.
Like Huntington's is rad and it's small. And then when we were like putting the smoothie together, I had never been to the Costa Mesa one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Dude,
yeah.
It was like, it was lost.
Okay.
But they have like everything there, everything you can imagine, all these great products, like even like pre-made meals. And then the restaurant's legit.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah. So. Me too. Nice little
I'll tell you what, man. Mother's is the OG. It's like, the original.
It's the original,
it
dude.
Is,
it's
yeah.
the total OG spot. Like, health wasn't on the market.
No, it wasn't.
Like, when
it
I was growing up.
It wasn't like what it is now, where now you're seeking health because obviously all the major chain grocery stores have basically just contaminated our food with so much
everything.
Junk.
Nonsense.
It's all junk. It's all junk.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So it was before it was like the Whole Foods like craze and people, you know, really turning to that like health.
I think food in the 80s was a little bit better at the grocery store than it is now. It's just continually gotten worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff changes I know happened before the 80s, but then there was something big happened in the 90s. And that's when
Monsanto or something, right?
Something I don't really like. I'm not real big up on this stuff because I just ate whatever until recently when I started like having like health problems because I'm like 50 now. And I was like, I thought I was eating good, you know, until
you start diving deep.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. There wasn't information out there though before, you know, so like, I don't know. I grew up, I have.
Let's get into how you grew up.
Yeah, so I mean, my parents got together super young, like dated in middle school.
Wow.
Dad moved away, came back, broke up my mom's relationship. He came back in hot, you know, ready. He knew he wanted her. Crazy funny story. Like my mom's parents like didn't approve. Like my dad was kind of like wild child, nut job. Great guy, you know, but they got married super young, had their first kid at 19. So they started the family like crazy young, had my next brother, ended up losing their first son.
Mm.
So like that weight I felt my whole life, you know, like so crazy, like because my dad struggled with like addiction and alcohol, like struggled like my whole life. So seeing that pain, I like understood it, but I didn't. So when I had my daughter, it was like, bro, it's like my heart's flying right now, you know? Just wild. Like you just love someone so much and you lose them and it's so crazy. So yeah, like my childhood was good, but.
How many siblings?
Four.
Okay.
So.
And where are you in that four?
I'm in the middle.
Okay. And but, were you, how old was your brother when he passed?
2.5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
My dad lost his first son, 18 months old. And I know, I know what you are saying when you kind of like my brother and I kind of suffered a little bit of the consequences of my first brother's death because it was harder for my dad to bond with us.
Yeah, you know, you don't understand it, but you do. So it's such like a crazy thing. And my parents were so cool. Like they were so open about it. Like we always talked about him. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like we forgot. Mm-hmm. No. But yeah, so I felt that like growing up and it was crazy and like the love was always there, but there was like a disconnect a little bit just because the coping mechanisms that I saw growing up were drinking. So mm-hmm. it was like, if you're doing good at something, you drink. Mm-hmm. If you're struggling, you drink. So whether it was hard times or good times or whatever it may be, like it was partying was involved, you know? And I think being in Huntington's such a rad place. Like mm-hmm. there's so much natural talent that comes out of there and people get stuck in that quicksand of partying. And it's weird because it always like attracted me too, you know, like, I don't know about you guys, but just like health food wasn't really like on the map. Neither was like positive role models. Like, I don't know, like most of the people that I was attracted to growing up were the guys that like, they surfed the best, they partied the hardest and they got the chicks. So that was like, I want to be him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously there were still like when I was growing up, I was born in 1990. So there was like the Kobe Bryants and all that. But like, I just was always drawn to like the guys that were more on the wild side of everything. Yeah. So, and even a bunch of the HB boys, you know? So like I grew up surfing, like that was like kind of my first love. I played sports growing up. Like my mom was superwoman. She had four kids.
Yeah.
And she did everything for us. My parents were like entrepreneurs, always finding something, always giving us a good life. Even if like they weren't doing good, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They went through some hard times, like, man, like figuring it out, like starting one business, starting another. We always got what we needed. You know what I mean? So we were always like provided for. The love was always there. I think they even loved us more because of what they went through.
Sure.
So there was always like, they held us a little tighter. But at the same time, there was like the alcohol that was around. And I would see, even as a little kid, like I knew my dad. And then I'm like, bro, I'm kind of scared of this fucking guy a little bit, you know? And nothing like he would ever do anything physical. But it was just like, whoa, this isn't the dude that I know, you know? Yeah. And so you'd see all these weird changes, weird smells even. I remember those smells even as a little kid in the morning of like when the alcohol is coming out of your pores. And it's so weird to like touch back on that. But yeah, so I grew up, Huntington, surfed, did all the sports, fell in love with surfing, kind of fell in love with just that whole community. Like it's such a core part of Huntington. Like Huntington's grown into such a big city, but the core part of it is really small still. Mm-hmm. All the families that have kind of been there forever, Turner families like at Sugar Shack and like the Pies that run HSS, all those people just support all the Groms and all the families. Like I remember being in sixth grade, Sugar Shack sponsored me. I was like, dude, this is sick, you know, slap that sticker on the nose, 2 free breakfasts a week. Like just great people. Like, you know, everyone just kind of looks out for each other. And it's something, I think that's why I'm so proud to be from there.
Yeah.
And my dad knows everybody, and I got all my uncles, dude, like all my dad's boys. They always kind of ran downtown. They either worked at the bars or worked at the shops or some type of business there. So, and all those guys kind of party too. So that was just always like an influence in my life. And I didn't know that, I didn't know like the path that maybe it would lead me on, you know? So pretty like going through it, I turned like 18. I mean, well, actually, like, starting off, I was younger. I was in high school. I had a buddy. He was going out of town. He sold weed. He's like, hey, like, take over my business for a little bit while I'm gone. I was like, oh, rad. I'll do that. I made, like, $2,000 or something in, like, 2 weeks. I'm like, dude. And this is a little bit, we're coming into the recession, like, 2005, 2006. So my parents were hurting. They were in real estate at the time. So everything stopped. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was like, dude, I could be self-employed and I could surf. I could do whatever I want. So I was doing that. And like, I never, like everyone knew what I was doing, but I was always very discreet on like, if I was making, no one knew anything, you know? So I was kind of that kid, and I just, you know, high school was high school. High school was like clientele for me. That was like the main reason why I went to high school, you know, like go like, hey, tell the teacher, like, I'm going to dip. I'll be back and go like weigh out some stuff and boom, 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 bah. I just made $300. I'm making more than my teacher is, you know? So like that was kind of like high school. And then falling out of high school, you go from kind of partying with friends and then you're just kind of using, and it's not really fun anymore. So moved out with my two, like my one very best friend, and then someone else I was close with, an iron worker and a crane guy. So we were 18, like, dude, it was out of control. I remember like it just got to a point where it started off really fun, and it was parties and all that, and then it wasn't fun. And it was like my buddy, my best friend, had been a drug addict like most since we were like 15. Second he started drinking and like doing blow again, like that's what you would see, but he'd be going in the bathroom and like slamming dope, you know? Yeah. And it was like, we didn't notice because we're just like putting down a fifth of whatever and putting whatever up our nose, and he's just like going off the deep end. And then my other roommate fell off the deep end, and then it just got really gross, you know? I was like, this, I think like a month before our lease was up, I bailed. I was like, dude, this is hard. Like, this is hard for me. And I could like deal with some pretty dirty like environments. And it just got to a point where I was like, I don't like any of this, you know? And I was still partying super hard. And that was when me and my wife started hanging out more. And she was in a weird point in her life. She had gone through some crazy trauma. So it was like two negatives kind of meeting. Sure. We were like together, but we were partying super, but we were so young, like 19. Yeah, okay. So it's like, you don't,
in Huntington
State. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You don't think anything you're doing is wrong, but you're kind of building this like negative foundation where everything's evolved around certain things. And when everything you do in life has to do with like Coke and buying a bottle of Jack, it's kind of like, okay, maybe I do have an issue. But I never looked at it that way because everybody I've always looked up to in life, that's what they did too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, we got together. We're doing that. She gets pregnant like 3 months and us dating. And it was like, okay, so we got to wise up a little bit. Like, I thought I knew everything. I thought I knew what was up. I'm 19, dude. I'm having a kid. I got this shit. Like, this is no problem. I'm a man. I was like not a man at all. I knew nothing about like a lot, you know? So, yeah, man, doing that. We have our daughter, and then it was like all of our friends, they still party, and we still wanted to be included. Like, you still want to be included because you're so young, you know, and no one else has a family yet. Yeah. So that was a hard thing to kind of balance, and we would just party, like, on the weekends. And I thought that was, like, being good. Like, I'm dad Monday through Friday. My mom could watch the kid, and I'll go blackout on Saturday, you know, and then it just got to a point where that was feeling gross too. You know, I think it was such a trip for me. It was my last night of partying was when McGregor fought Eddie Alvarez. Wow. And watching that fight, insane fight, by the way, like McGregor put on probably like his best performance ever, you know, to me. But yeah, that was just like a wild night. Like we went super hard, and I remember I felt sick for like a week, and I was like, something in my head was just telling me like, you need to be done. And it was like, it's kind of weird. Like, you ever like talk to yourself like in your head? I don't know. Yeah. Like that voice coming back to you. I don't know if that's us or if to me, like, I kind of always feel like that's maybe like a little bit of God, you know, like you're building that relationship. You're having these full conversations in your own head. And something told me I needed to be done. So I just was like, okay, I'm going to pull back. And man, God just like kind of, that was when I started to realize like God works in my life. So I had pulled back. I think I was 2 months sober. Yeah, like probably 2 months. And then things started falling into place. My wife, like, I didn't know she was struggling the way she was, and her life started to crumble. Like, she lost her job and she was messing up. And then she came to me and was like, dude, I've been way, way deeper than I've expressed, you know? So that was like a huge eye opener. And then like my best friend, he wanted to go to treatment, and he's been before, and I've never been able to support him because I'd never been sober. Like, being young and being dumb, like, you support your friends when they tell you these type of things, but then at the same time you're like, oh, you're down to go out Friday? And like,
right. Oh, for sure.
You know, like okay. you're willing to let them right back on the wagon, and you have no idea like
totally.
What it How, took what them it, to get clean.
What, yeah, what it took them to get clean and what it means yeah. for them to get back off the wagon or on the wagon, whatever it is, like their life is about to fucking yeah. really
yeah.
derail.
Yeah. Like I was picking them up from like, I was sneaking them out of like sober livings when we were like yeah. 17 going out. Like, and he would stay good, but like a real friend would be like, bro, what are you doing?
Totally.
Just stay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you're risking so much. Like yeah. you're going to go to jail if you get caught. Like mm-hmm. it's, so yeah, like he called me. He was in his mom's garage. I didn't even know this. Like he had hit me up. He just told me this kind of, I think my 7 year sobriety date. He called me and told me like what had happened. And I had no idea. So he was like, I hit you up that day. I was in my mom's garage. They were trying to get me to go to rehab. Wasn't into it. I called you. I was strung out. And you told me you were sober. And it was like one of those things that helped him. Mm. I was whoa. So, you know, like that's crazy. Like yeah. that's God working. Yeah. And then my wife, like everything crumbled. So we were working on everything and it was like, okay, let's get sober. You know, like let's
and
do
how
it
old
for real.
You guys?
I think we were at the time 20. Let me see here. I think I was like 23.
Okay.
It's pretty young.
Yeah.
So we were doing that and then, you know, it was pretty crazy. It was pretty wild. Like everything seemed like it was going good. We never fixed our problems in our marriage or anything. It was kind of like we put a Band-Aid on, like sure. a big Band-Aid, you mm-hmm. know, like let's ignore everything. You said you're doing good. We're so young. We're trying to figure out life. Like that's how I felt, you know, yeah. like, how do I provide? Like, like the second we found out we were having a kid, like I stopped selling stuff. I wanted to be legit. I wanted to be like a real dad. So I started off working in a restaurant. And I like, to me, it felt like a low blow, like compared to what I was doing mm-hmm. and what I was making. And it was like, it was super humbling. You know, this was like a reality check. Got in like a real job, got in like water drilling business. That opened up other doors. They wanted me to go out of town. I ended up working for my best friend's family. They drill oil wells in Huntington and they had a crane department. And that was my friend that had called me that was going to go to rehab. Mm-hmm. So now I'm working for his family. His grandpa had passed away. Family business kind of like blew up. Like it was just like kind of a messy story. So I'm like trying to figure out what I want to do with my life. And I remember like me and my wife were just starting to do good. Had a good friend of mine. I would always work out with them. I'd always hit the gym. Like I was always super, super into fitness through all of this. And we would like, you know, you bro out, you're training with people, you get real. Like that's like
yeah.
where real conversations go down. Like, so he was like, I would always talk about God and stuff. And he was a pastor at like kind of like a recovery church. So it was super cool. And to me, it wasn't the standard like Christian people, like you felt judged if you went mm-hmm. being like young or having like certain mistakes that you've made. And with him, his story's crazy. And I was like, I just related to it. So I started going to church. Me and my wife started going to church. I was the only one in my family who's never been baptized. And my parents wanted us to do it on our own. Like God kind of saved them through what they went through. Mm-hmm. And I always knew that, but like, I had my doubts. I had like, dude, you know, this is kind of wild, bro. Like you're telling me the stuff I'm reading, like this happened, even though I've seen them do like a lot of good for my family. I don't know. I had my walls up. So started going to church. Every time I went to church, it was like, the message was like slapping me in the mm-hmm. face, bro. Like it was directed at me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get baptized. So my best friend like baptized me. And it was super cool. And I remember just being overwhelmed. And then I think like 2 weeks later, local 12 union calls me. They're like, you're getting in. And that was what I was, a job that I was trying to get. So I was like, bro, everything's falling into place. Like I got my career. I got like my family's doing good. But we still never like dove into our issues, you know, just yeah. being young parents. Eventually things like kind of imploded. So I knew stuff was going on with my wife. I knew I had this like that. I had that feeling of like you kind of feel sick yeah. to the pit of your stomach. You know stuff's going on, but you know if you face it, it's mm-hmm. gonna hurt. So like I ignored it for a long time. Went to work, you know, we're just so much, like so much new stuff in my life with work being stressful and trying to stay in shape, stay on the gym, still be a dad, be a husband. I knew that that grenade was going to go off. I felt it. And eventually it did. My buddy, we were doing like some marriage, like counseling stuff through the church with him because we were trying to work out our stuff. She called me. She's like, I can't make it today. I'm like, dude, there's always some, like, what's up? And then, yeah, she just came clean. She hit me up. We met up. Pretty much told me like she's been using and she's been struggling. I knew it. I should have pushed harder like in that, and I didn't. But I think part of when I did push, she would deny it. But I think at the same time, she was lying, but at the same time, I was in a little bit of denial just because I didn't want to deal with what I knew I would be dealing with. Right. And I was already like a young dad trying to provide. I think there was just like that pressure, you know, of trying to make it, figure it out, prove the world wrong that like you could do it young and this and that. And it was crazy. She went to Hogue and then she ended up landing here at, this was the first rehab that she went to.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that was like, coming in here, she just told me, she's like, dude, I have goosebumps right now. This is crazy.
Wild.
Yeah. Yeah. So like a small world.
Super small.
Our lives were here 5 years ago and it's been 5 years. And it's so funny because social media is a trip, right? Like people see you in your life and they just think like everything's been easy.
Oh, totally.
You know, like they, you know, you get some people that like understand, but a lot of people kind of just hate on you for whatever, or maybe whatever it may be. Like, it's so funny, dude. You know, yeah. I'm like, bro, I've worked so hard to be where I'm at. Like, I thought when she came to rehab, I thought our marriage was done. I was over it. I was like, okay, this isn't the first time. I was pissed. I'd like been sober. I was like mad at like God kind of, because I thought I was doing everything right. I was the most selfish prayer in the world, dude. I only prayed when I needed stuff. Yeah. It was a very one-sided relationship, you know? So like
Shane, you smiling like you can relate.
I can relate.
Right? Like, yeah. Like something happens and you're like, hey dude, need you again. And it's like, that's not how it works. That's not establishing a real relationship. That's not a consistent relationship. Totally. And not just with God, but with anybody in your life that you care about. Like if I only reach out to you every time I need something, you're going to be like, maybe the first few times you lay out that helping hand. But eventually it's like, dude, you keep making the same mistakes. You don't stay in contact with me. You don't do anything for me. So yeah, it was pretty wild. I thought I was done. Again, I was working out with my buddy. I'm telling him, like, bro, I think I'm moving on. I'll figure it out. We'll pay whatever. I got her an apartment. And then I'm talking to him one day. And he's like, bro, like, she's putting in the work right now. And if you leave her, I'm just letting you know. He goes, I'll support you either way. But you might miss out on the best version of her, like, that you've ever seen.
Great advice.
What a good friend.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was wild because, of course, I'm sure you guys know, but when your life implodes, you kind of let all your friends know and your family know. And now you have all these outsized noises. Everyone's in your ear.
100%.
And so many of them give the wrong advice.
Ooh, a lot. Yeah.
Like most of them.
Yeah. Like their marriages are imploding and they're telling you what to do.
Right. Yeah. Or they've already been divorced. Yeah. Or, you know.
Well, it's just like you... an addict basically that's in their addiction, right? And their friend trying to get sober, and their friend goes, okay, I want to roll out. It's like that person telling you, let's roll out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's very difficult to have all those voices in your head because their situations, I mean, that's why I'm like, what a good friend to tell you that in the sense of very selfless and not thinking about himself or what he would do.
Yeah.
It's like, make sure that you're really, is this something that you really want to
do
for yourself, for your marriage, for your family, for, you know?
Yeah. It made me think. I questioned everything that, cause in my head I was made up, like my mind was made up. I'm like, I'm done. And when he said that, I was like, wait a minute, you know? And I was seeing these changes in her too. So, and these were real, like, this was like, I loved her to death, you know? So, but like, obviously we grew apart and like things were going on, but there was all these other factors in that. It wasn't really like there was something changing her. It wasn't really, she wasn't her like authentic self, you know, she was struggling and she was within like her addiction. So I'm starting to see this like version of my wife blossom. And it was like, whoa, okay. And then for him to say that, and I cared about his opinion, you know, a lot of the opinions being thrown at me, I really didn't care.
Yeah.
Some people, I think, selfishly give you the wrong advice because they want you like for themselves almost in a weird way, or they want to see like
miserable and they want your life to be
miserable. Miserable loves company.
Yeah. I had people like when we started being together again, like getting mad at me, and they're like, well, you're not telling, like, you know, like I didn't even know. I'm like, bro, I don't owe you an explanation. I appreciate you being there when I vented, when I needed you, but I didn't know that came with a IOU on everything I'm doing in my life, dude. Like, I'm trying to rebuild and figure things out right now. This is like overwhelming, you know, like this has nothing to do with you. This is me trying to figure it out. So yeah, it was crazy. Started seeing these changes and I'm like, dude, I love her. I think we can make this work. Let's do it. And we got her out of her studio and we got a place together again. And it was crazy. It was the beginning of a whole new life. And I had no idea, you know, like it was wild. And for the first time, I think we were happy, you know, and we were like broke. Like it was like we were rebuilding, but God provides, you know, like, dude, we stuck together. Work was as busy as it's ever been. I was just hammering down like 100-hour weeks every week. At the time, it was a blessing because I needed the money up again. I needed to do this. We bounced back right away. And then all of a sudden, like all the things we neglected, like when we were super young, like communication, like maybe one of the most like important things in a marriage, we started doing. And we started telling each other like how we felt, what made us upset, why we're upset, not going to bed angry anymore, like actually like sitting down, like we started to grow up, I guess you could say, you know, for the first time. And I remember we're just laying in bed one day and we're just laughing, like, so like just kids. And I looked at her, I'm like, dude, we made it. Like we figured it out. That was like the ding, ding, like you guys, we did it, you know, and we were happy, just genuinely freaking happy. And we've been riding hard together ever since, you know, and all these people in my life from getting sober to like, I remember like there was only like maybe two situations that I almost felt like breaking sobriety. One of them was the first time she relapsed. And right before that, I just thought of this, like I forgot about it. But one of my best friend's dad passed away. Mm-hmm. And like, what do? Like you drink together, you know? They handed me a beer and I was like 3 months into sobriety and I was just holding it like this, like, I'm not drinking, guys. They're like, dude, come on, bro. Like,
yeah,
we're celebrating John. I'm like, I know, but like, this isn't how I'm trying to celebrate anymore. I opened the beer and my best friend that just got out of rehab had walked up and was like, fuck that. You know, why are you guys giving him that? And it was like, whoa, like he had my back, you know, and I had his. Yeah. So it's
those
like
are little God moments.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Those are little God moments where God was like, nah, you don't need that.
I almost caved, dude. I was going to drink it. And like, if I would have drank it, would have fallen off the wagon and my wife would have fallen after needing my help and I couldn't have been there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so that was one thing. And then, when she had ended up here, I got sent out to Vegas. Like it was just a hard time. Like, and I didn't almost drink then, but I just remember when we weren't together, like those thoughts come back. Like I could drink right now. Nobody would know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like nobody would know.
I can't even like have those thoughts anymore because if I drink right now, everybody will know.
Oh yeah. 100%.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Like
100%
immediately.
Yeah. You go streaking down the road.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's what's happening. No, yes. Totally. Yes. Chad is on the news running down the street naked because he drank today.
Yeah.
So help him.
Seriously. And I knew I had like I have the most beautiful little girls, too. So like I knew for it wasn't I mean, it you have to do it for you. But like it, I'm seeing them, you know.
Yeah.
I knew like my dad was a good dad, but I saw that struggle. Mm-hmm. I knew what it took him. Like I know what it did to him. I never wanted my kids to have those memories, those smells, those, why is my dad acting like weird. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah, we made it out of that and we were together and it was pretty crazy because some of the people that did have like crap to say when I was going, they're like hitting us up for like marriage advice, whatever it may be. And no judgment, dude. Like, we got you, you know, like whatever advice you guys want, we're here, we're an open book. And then it was just crazy. Like, now we were sober together for the first time, totally like such a real difference. Like, we were a unit. We're a unit now, you know? Yeah. My dad wanted to get sober. Never seen him sober in my entire life. My old man, hit me up. He's like, dude, I want to do it. He had done it in the past, like 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, celebrated like, hey, I hit 3 months sobriety. I'm going to get fucked up tonight.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, dude, that's not how it goes. but I was telling him, I'm like, bro, you're in your 50s. Like, your life's not over. Like, you're overweight, but you could change. My dad grew up, like, my dad was always in great shape. Total, like, he was a stud, you know? I'm like, bro, you could get your life back. And, like, right now, you need to figure it out. Like, your eyes are yellow, you know? Yeah. Like, think, dude, you don't look good. You're 60 pounds overweight. You have grandkids, dude. Like, things that you couldn't show up for me for because of, like, your addiction, like, you could show up for them, you know? And I just went and bought him a surfboard. We surfed together. I don't think either of us even got a wave. The wave sucked, but it was like one of the most special moments in my life, in the sense of like, I'm surfing with my old man right now. I haven't even seen him outside of our house, like our family house, in a while, you know? So, and he just stayed on it. He started riding his cruiser. He was always, like, weirdly enough, like I said, super into health foods, like mothers and everything else. So sharpened up his nutrition. Dude, he dropped like 60 pounds. Now he's like the biggest Grom in the world. Wow. And he's in Northside parking lot every single day. Like, and it's cool because it's crazy, because growing up, I never thought there was like healthy, positive role models. They were always there. I was just never looking. You know, my eyes were never open. Like, there's guys in Huntington that have been through it. And they've been through it all, and they're sober, and they're willing to help you and give you advice. But you got to want it. You got to open those doors, dude, you know? And there's a whole crew of guys down at the pier that are sober, and they live, like, these, like, healthy lives, and they surf, and they rip, and they're in their 50s. They're, like, one of them's turning 60 next month. We're going to Kelly Slater wave pool for his birthday. He's turning 60. He's got 35 years sobriety.
Yeah.
Amazing. You know, it's rad. And it's like, it's cool to know those guys are out there. And that's kind of what I want to be in, like, in like the youths. Like, I feel like there's this big turning point in health right now, where it's cool again. Mm-hmm. And I think if people that have any type of platform that could shed a little bit of light and let these younger kids know, like, dude, there's like, being healthy is cool. Being in shape's cool. Like, having faith is cool. Like, being a good son, a good husband, a good boyfriend, a good friend, like a good brother, like, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Not like going and slamming dope and gambling with your life, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, obviously, like, your guys' whole movement is so special, like, with the fentanyl thing. Quick story. I'll shed, one of, like, my biggest role models in my life, his name was Johnny Kissel. He, like, my third grade project, they're like, who's your hero? Johnny Kissel. Who is Johnny Kissel? Johnny Kissel is a fucking legend, dude. Like, this guy from, like, Sunset Seal Beach. Man, you know those people that just have that energy and you can't explain it? This guy, you could throw him in any room, anywhere, you would remember him the rest of your life. Super, super, just like a level of energy that was so, so freaking, like, inspiring to be around. And the guy was so, like, he was just no one was like him ever in the world, especially to me. Like, I looked up to him. I remember he used to make these videos called Johnny Trouble. It was basically Jackass before Jackass came out. It was just about him. He was a nut. He would do anything. So, he was always, like, the partier, but he fell, like, hard. Like, he got into, like, speed and everything else later. It went from, like, partying and fun. He lived with us for a little bit when I was growing up. He was, like, just that fun guy, and then it got dark, you know? And he kind of went, like, homeless and all this stuff, and it was so sad because he was everybody's best friend. Everybody felt like Johnny Kissel was their best friend because that's how he made you feel. Mm-hmm. So when he fell, like, man, like, everyone kind of turned their backs on him, but it wasn't like anyone turned, like, dude, you have to want it, you know? Like, you were no longer Johnny Kissel. Like, he was gone, and it was sad. He ended up being in, like, Havasu with, like, family friends, and there's a jump rock next to, what is Copper Canyon's right there? There's that cliff to the left.
Yeah.
He had done it a few times with the surfboard and he went to do it again, but the water levels were lower. He ended up like hitting bottom. I guess in like a really weird way, he went out being like the crazy guy that he was, but he had a son named Zach, and Zach was my little brother. I mean, I held him the day he was born. My little brother's best friend, basically my little brother. So he had like lost his idol, you know? And then, man, like when fentanyl started coming around, like we tried to help Zach out, and man, he moved in my parents' house to try to get him clean. He would want it, but there was always, he was never staying, you know? He ended up bailing out of my parents' house. My mom had like the grandkids over and there was stuff going on that she couldn't really like allow in the house. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was like a fentanyl, like we ended up losing Zach too. Mm. So they found him in the bathrooms, like on south side of the pier in the parking lot, you know? And it was like, dude, it's frustrating, you know? Like I wanted him to experience life. He never got to experience life, like what it was like to have his own place and his car. And like, it sucks. These kids are losing these battles and they don't even know what life is yet. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they haven't even gotten to experience like anything, bro. Like, and it pisses me off, you know, it sucks. And it's like, that's like such a great thing that you guys are doing and putting stories out there and shedding light on like what's really going on, because it's happening every day and no one seems to really talk about it. Yeah. You know, so just, I love what you guys are doing, man. You know, it's sobriety's changed my life. It's something I try to bring up on my platform, you know, because between sobriety came, I mean, fitness was always there, but fitness became so much more special to me when sobriety came into my life, because mm-hmm. they're so similar. Like I said it like on one of my videos on Instagram, like they run parallel together. You know, you can't think too far down the line because you'll get overwhelmed. It's really just one day at a time, you know, and before you know it, like you're just sticking to these little simple tasks, but those simple tasks like stack up. Mm-hmm. And as they stack up every day, you're building like this mental strength and physical strength, and you're getting stronger, and you're figuring out who you are, and you're like callousing your mind to do these things that you're uncomfortable doing. Mm-hmm. And when life does decide to come and like chin check you, you're ready for it. You don't even know you are, but you've built up, like you built up the strength to say no or avoid certain situations. Or when those like other friends that you thought were friends are like, hey bro, here, you mm-hmm. could say no. And then you do, like, I've built this community around me. Like I have everyone around me in my life is sober. I'm like, how did this happen? But we, you draw that attention and you know what I mean? You're putting that like vibe out there. You're like, you attract what you are. So between my wife, like our best friends, my family, my parents, my sister got sober, my brother-in-law got sober. Like there's just like naturally built this like freaking army around me, you know? And we all support each other. And I think that's what's so important with the gym too, is you're changing your life for the better. And when you go to the gym and stuff, there's everyone's different. There's so much like diversity, but you all share something in common. Mm-hmm. You're in the gym. You want to like, you want some type of self-improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're going to start meeting people regardless of like what your background is. You start meeting these people that have like similar traits as you do. Mm-hmm. And you, of course, like you could start having conversations. And just to really anybody out there that feels super lost and alone, like, dude, go outside, go hit the boardwalk, go hit the gym, go hit a meeting, go do something, because you're gonna start connecting, you know? And the more you connect with people and build these relationships, life just starts to blossom, you know? And you realize you're not alone. I think that's where so many of these young kids, they just think they're alone, and they're not. Even people that aren't young. I mean, I know plenty of adults that like reach out to me on Instagram, like, I don't know what to do. I'm like, no one around me is sober. It's like, bro, you got to start opening some doors. You know what I mean? Like, you got to get out there and find it. I had sobriety around me. I just never looked for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's just a journey that everyone walks their own. But I think you got to get advice from people. You got to communicate. You got to talk to people. Like, listen to podcasts. Talk to people in the gym. Talk to people in church or an AA meeting or reach out to people on Instagram too. You know, yeah. Instagram's got a lot of crazy stuff going on, but there's a lot of good. There's a lot of good that comes out of it too.
You start really changing your algorithm on Instagram. Oh. There's nothing bad on my Instagram ever. Maybe something like inappropriate, but like other than that, it's like my feed's full of positive, motivational. Sobriety based shit.
Yeah. Me too, dude. It used to be full of politics and hate and the news. And
oh man, I had a full politic like platform going for a while. Yeah,
You were on one.
Yeah. Dude. I mean, I love what you're doing because, like, I mean, we're all about the exact same stuff that you're about. You know, health is wealth.
100%.
And honestly, the people that hate what we're doing. Two major big huge organizations in America. The pharmaceutical industry hates us.
Oh yeah.
And so does the alcohol companies.
Yeah.
They don't want sobriety.
No.
And they don't want health. And you're right. The Recover Out Loud and the Hopeaholics podcast, it's more than just a sober movement. It's a health movement.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like,
well,
because
they coincide.
Health and wellness.
Yeah.
You know, it all blends together.
Yeah.
Mind, body, soul. When you're
getting mind, body, soul. You nailed it.
That's the trifecta right there.
And they all got to be working at simultaneously.
They do.
And they, or else things fall off, you know?
And
so it's.
And they better look the fuck out because, you know what, people like us are the ones that are going to take over the world because, you know what, the people that are drinking and still trying to do the same shit that we're doing,
yeah,
they're not doing it to the level that we're doing it. They can't.
No.
You can't.
What you just said, mind, body, soul, that was something like I was lacking in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's why things crumbled again.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't balanced.
Totally.
It was like sober and providing for my family, but like, dude, I was missing so much on the back end. Mm-hmm. And you have to nail all of those.
You do. It's something that is like, because I've fallen off before in
yeah.
my sobriety journey, and it's because I didn't have all three.
Yeah.
You know, one was missing, or one was lacking, or one wasn't. Yeah. I wasn't putting forth the effort, and then obviously left to my own devices is not good.
No.
So it's like,
she's a shit show.
Yeah, I am. And now I know that. So I'm very aware of what I need to do to make sure that I'm staying on the path. And I love like you having your platform and congratulations to you and your wife for sticking in it and holding on.
Yeah.
Because it is a beautiful thing, you know, and it people see the highlight reel of Instagram and things of that nature, but they don't see the work behind closed doors.
Yeah.
And when the lights are out, you know, like Kobe Bryant always says, you know, you don't see, or Michael Jordan, they say it all the time in the sense of you don't see how many hours they were putting in, not on the big screen. You know what I mean? So it's like, you got to work for sobriety. And that's, I think that's the toughest thing for people, especially when a loved one is watching someone in their addiction. It's difficult because you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing is, the individual has to really want to do it themselves because it does. I always say it too. The program has like all those cliches, and I remember sitting in them, and I used to always be like, oh my God, these are so annoying and they're so dumb, but they're so true. It's a simple program, but it requires work.
Yeah.
Right? And like the one day at a time. Yeah. It literally is one day at a time.
That's it.
That's all we got.
It literally is.
Yeah.
That's all we got anyways.
And it teaches you so much about life outside of that, you
for
know?
For sure.
That's why you see sober people, like, once they get sober and figure it out, like, dude, they're, like, talented and hard work. Like,
and crushed. I would rather somebody come in here and say, I used to fucking be a drug addict.
Yeah.
Homeless, whatever it is. And can I have a job now?
Yeah.
Because I'm like... Yeah, because you're not going to want to just work 40 hours, right?
Yeah, you're ready to go.
Yeah,
you've already done harder things than this.
Yeah. I remember when I got clean the first time, I was 23 years old. I was in rehab and they were like, you need to get a job. And I was like, oh, I've never had a job before. And then I got a job and they were like, you got to work 40 hours a week. And I was like, what am I going to do with the rest of my time? Like, you know, yeah. I immediately when I got sober, added the gym into my life.
Yep.
Was really big into the 12-step community for a long, long time in the beginning of my journey. So, like, I was constantly filling my time so that I didn't have like, you know, that extra time, because mm-hmm. when I was out there hustling, it was all day, every day.
Yeah.
Cause I didn't even sleep because I was a meth addict.
Yeah.
I rarely slept.
You were wired a certain way already.
I was wired for this. And then that's why, and then I became an entrepreneur. And then when you're an entrepreneur, no entrepreneur works Monday through Friday.
No.
Like
no.
None of the drama in my business ever happens between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. None of it.
Yeah.
It all happens usually after 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Or midnight.
Yeah.
You know? I have got to a point in my life now where I don't really have to deal with the after midnight stuff.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm up at 3 a.m. So mm-hmm. bring it on.
Yeah.
Bring it on anytime after 3 a.m.
It's crazy too. Like, it only takes one person like you, you know, like one person needs to lead from the front
100%.
And that's it, you know, and you could be put in any situation anywhere, dude. And if you lead from the front, you're going to be like infectious towards those around you.
Totally.
I came from the blue collar world, dude. Like local 12 crane boys, like mm-hmm. bro, it's the Wild West. These guys do things I cannot say. It is so illegal. You know, I'm like, don't even want to put it on the air. Like, bro, like the guys that build America, dude, are gnarly.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I'm talking like these dudes come from a different my generation is soft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Soft. Yeah. Soft hands.
Yeah.
Nice. Like, bro, yes. The guys that I work with are the just different breed of mm-hmm. humans. And they don't really know any other way. And you would think, like, being in the industry that I was in and being sober and being young, it'd be intimidating. But, dude, it takes one person. And, like, fortunately, like, as you stay true to who you are, people mm-hmm. will give you the respect for that. Oh, but then you come to find out, like, this gnarly dude, he's sober.
Mm-hmm.
He smoked meth for like 15 years and you start to draw in and attract what you're putting out. And then that's what happened with me at work. Bro, we had like a crawler crew of like sober guys that didn't drink, didn't do drugs, and worked out as hard as they could, no matter what. We worked 100 hour weeks. We're still hitting the gym.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We still ate the right foods, mm-hmm. you know, like. It became like a thing, like, bro, if you didn't hit the gym, you weren't even allowed on our crew.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we still, we made exceptions for like the OG guys No one's changing them.
Yeah.
I tried.
Yeah.
I did my best, you know?
For sure.
And I would like slowly get in there and he would be doing okay. And then it was like, oh God.
The local union calendar models.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's just like what the program says, attraction rather than promotion. Cause that's what happens is that like usually, especially in sobriety, it's like you start seeing a change in an individual and you're wondering, or they have like this inner peace aura or something. And so mm-hmm. all of a sudden it'll strike up a conversation of like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm doing X, Y, and Z. So it's, I'm hitting the gym, I'm going to meetings, I'm doing a program, I've removed these substances. And then all of a sudden, a friend, a colleague, somebody is like, oh, maybe I'm going to give that a whirl.
Yeah.
And that's what the gift of like having the podcast, somebody listening to your story, you having your platform, because now people that are in other countries, other states, they're able to, especially the younger generation, because that's who I'm like worried for in the sense of, thank God I'm not active in my addiction because of the fentanyl crisis. I'd be dead for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like 100% because anything that I'm doing.
Yeah.
So, and now you can't recreationally try a drug anymore the way that it was when I was using.
Yeah.
Because you're going to die. Because that's how much the fentanyl is coming into the
United States. Everything.
It's in everything.
Everything.
Yeah. It's not in just like this one.
No. You don't hear about it either.
I know.
Like soon to be brother-in-law-ish. He's like firefighter medic. Dude, like three people flopped in Huntington. Like you don't hear about it. I only heard about it because it was from him and he was on the call.
Mm-hmm.
They all dropped. I think one or two of them died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what's even more scary too is like best case scenario is you do die.
Yeah.
Because then on the flip side is you end up paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
So you go in thinking you're going to have a good time, try this drug and enjoy your night out with your friends. And then you wake up in the hospital and you can't move your legs. You can't talk normally. Your face is disfigured. Like people don't talk about that side of it either.
Yeah.
Because trying a drug or cocaine or ecstasy or taking a Percocet, taking a Vicodin or whatnot is not the same as, and I'm talking about obviously illicit buying it on the street. Because there's a lot of people, and you don't hear about these stories at all, of doing that and ended up taking, you know, it being laced with fentanyl. And then now their family is becoming a caregiver and because you have become paralyzed.
Over a decision.
It's insane.
One bad decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a, you know, it's a decision that, you know, I made hundreds of times when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Because like ecstasy was cool and it was kind of new when I was in high school. I'm a lot older than you. I was about to graduate high school when you were born. I graduated in 1992.
But it's weird, like when you were doing that, as weird as this sounds, like drugs were cleaner. Like
they were.
It's crazy.
Exactly. And like I knew I was getting ecstasy. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah. Or I was getting something totally bunk.
Yeah. Which is like full of baby stuff or whatever, but it wasn't something that was going to kill you.
It wasn't something that was going to kill me. You know how many times I've taken something and you were like, you and your buddies were like,
for sure.
Dude, it's been an hour. Yeah. Are you feeling anything?
I'm waiting.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. I remember getting a bag one night and I was like, I should be up and I am extremely tired. I did not get what I thought I was purchasing. That was
not cocaine.
No. Yeah, me and my wife were like, dude, are you super tired? She's like, yeah. I'm like, this is.
Yeah, you're like, we just took sleeping pills.
Yeah, this is weird.
But yeah, I mean, it's scary, man. You know, and we had the honor for me because like I'm a convicted felon, and you know I spent my my last detox was at the 550 North Flower Street in Santa Ana, which is the main Orange County jail, and that's where that was my last detox protocol. And we had the Orange County Sheriff on the podcast, and he said that 7 out of 10 pills that are bought on the street are fentanyl. So
70% chance that you could flop.
Yeah.
Which isn't.
I mean, if you've never taken like
a fentanyl,
yeah,
you're dead.
No, you're yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say what really threw me off, like, whoa, this is like really getting wild. Is one of the girls that I sponsor, and she's 28. In the last year, she's lost 8 close friends to fentanyl. Like that's insane.
You're
that's
lucky to have 8 friends and you just lost 8. Like,
yeah,
dude, that's heavy.
Right. And I'm like, what? This is really crazy.
It's the sad thing is like we have one of our posts is basically just says why the Hopeaholics podcast exists. Right. And it has like thousands of comments, and I read through the comments sometimes because there are, 100 moms, sisters, brothers, dads that are telling us about that they just lost their kid, or that they put the date that they lost their child. And this is insane, and it has to stop, you know. And I you probably know why we started this, but like I lost my son-in-law on 9/11 of 2022. And you know, it's a hard day because you know how much you love your kids.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter, this was my first child. It's the first time I ever felt real love in my life or the ability to give it. And I really knew what love meant. And that little girl changed my life, the whole trajectory of my life to what it is today. And then on that day, I got a phone call that, you know, destroyed her life.
Yeah, which is...
horrible. And on top of that, I loved the kid.
Yeah,
he was an amazing hardworking young man that you know was trying to figure it out. He was trying to do what we all did, trying to figure out life, and he was just starting,
and he got screwed.
Then he got screwed. And but at the same time, I took that pain, and God gave us the gift of the Hopeaholics podcast, you know, to you know, start doing this deal and recovering out loud and continue the legacy.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, I always want to give people hope that they too can like take the pain that they feel and turn it into
positive.
Mm-hmm. Like I still let that fuel that rage fuel inside of me so that I will never let go. Like we're not going to stop. Like,
no.
You know when we'll be close to being done? You'll know, because you'll know that everybody knows who the fuck we are.
Yeah.
You know, like, people will be like, oh, yeah, I know the fentanyl, they're talking about it. And I'll be done. I'll stop talking on this microphone when fentanyl is fucking eradicated from the United States, at least.
Yeah, I agree. Like, and I'm sitting here and I'm staring at you, and I could see, like, the real, like, emotion and pain. And, like, people, and this is something that happened. That feeling never goes away,
no.
You know, and like it, like life goes on, and maybe some days are easier than others. And like I was telling you guys, it was hard for me to talk like when we first started, yeah. Like just thinking about my parents, you know, yeah. And it, like you said, I have like my daughter, and like you love something more than you love anything, you know, like you don't like when you don't care about yourself at all for mm-hmm. something else, like that's just genuine real love. And like to see like her get hurt over something that should have never happened. And like, I just hope like people that are listening and that are out there, like your parents, your family, your loved ones, like, dude, that pain doesn't go away. And it only takes one decision. That's not even really, you don't even know. Like, that's why you just have to, like, you can't mess up, dude. Yeah. You can't like buy recreational drugs on the street. Like, no. There's just, dude, it is a different world and it's a different game. And honestly, there's something behind it on they want it out there. And that's why it's out there, you know. And I think people like you guys connecting and putting stuff out there, like we're all connected, which is so crazy. You know, like I could feel your story. It's so genuine. And like I it relates to how I feel. Like I see my parents lost their son 35, 6 years ago. They wear that pain today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been that long, and like I see, like no one should ever go through that. I saw it growing up. I don't wish that upon my worst enemies. It is something no one should ever go through, and the fact that it's happening every day is
every day.
It's frustrating.
300 times.
Yeah,
every single day, 300 people. And here's the thing: like I feel this pain, but the pain that his father and his mother feel is cuts way deeper than the pain that I feel, you know. Even the pain that my daughter feels,
yeah,
cuts way deeper
than that was their baby,
yeah,
and their only child.
Yeah,
it was their baby, their only child. And this is happening to 300 families every single day. And the way it sits right now, everybody is one person away,
yeah,
from a loved one dying. So like you're these two are one person away from two people,
yeah,
right now, because you have somebody, your friend's son,
yeah,
and that's how the world is now.
Yeah,
it's like everybody is one person away now.
You know what sucks too? It pisses me off because like when I was growing up, it was Oxy, and those were real big, and then obviously that was a big scam that they wanted to,
yeah,
to kill us, yeah, pretty much. Cool. They didn't care. It was like, okay, we're making $4 billion a year in profit, like fuck everybody's life. Mm-hmm. You know, and they knew about it, mm-hmm, but it was whatever and they didn't care. And then when I was in high school and coming out of high school, like everyone was dying from Oxy. I lost like multiple friends to Oxy. And then what's sad is like the younger generation, like my little brother Zach that passed away, he was, you can't get Oxy, it's too expensive, it's too hard to get, so he's ordering fentanyl from China, and he's trading it for heroin, but can't get heroin, so he just running fentanyl.
Yeah,
you know, like it, he just needed to get loaded. And that was it. It's crazy that it's like, oh, he had easier access to that than heroin. So, and it's like, from what I know, it's way, I've talked to some crazy heroin junkies, like addicts that like were in my trade, and one of them had done fentanyl, and he's like, dude, it was the gnarliest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah,
it was. He goes, I come from a long line of heroin addicts, and this was a different league.
Yeah,
you know, which I was like, oh really? And this was probably 8 years ago, so I didn't even really know. Yeah. Like I knew about fentanyl, but
it's heroin on trend.
Yeah.
Trend.
Yeah, exactly.
Not even steroids. It had like trend.
Just trend.
Like
the one.
Yeah. The one
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and dude, it's crazy. Like, it take people got to open up. People got to talk. People got
to, you know, and it comes packaged in a cute little pill. Heroin, like, at least in California, it's a little bit prettier in on the East Coast because it's like white powder, right? But heroin in California is pretty gnar. It's fucking black tar heroin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that shit's like.
It smells like shit.
Yeah, it smells like vinegar. Yeah, it smells gross. Yeah. It looks gross. Yeah. You were like, I got to put this in a spoon and cook it. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? You know?
So yeah, it has
like,
that weird smell. Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. If I'm just, I mean, I've done it, but I'm just saying, I'm not doing that if I'm not a first time user. No. But a cute little blue pill, that's not scary. Yeah.
Not at all. Looks like a Skittle.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, you know,
it's so easy. Like, there's no, like, you know, like growing up, smoking cigarettes, smoking weed, like all these things, like you were going to get buzzed. Like people knew, like when they package it pretty in a little pill, like you said, and all you got to do is like have a water bottle and you just.
Nobody even knows you took it.
And it's in your system now and you have no idea when it's going to hit you, what you do.
I mean, coming home from just smoking a cigarette when I was like 12, 13. I don't know about you guys, but we'd be like washing our hands, spraying cologne. The cologne shit never
worked. Bro, now that I don't smoke cigarettes, I can smell a cigarette from 3 miles away. I don't know who I thought I was fooling with the cologne and Axe spray.
The Axe.
I'm like, I'm good. Shh. My teachers are like, bro. My mom's like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, even alcohol.
Alcoholics always think they don't stink.
Yeah, like there was a period of time where I'm like, yeah, vodka, the whole cliche, like if you drink vodka, you don't smell it, whatever. I can smell alcohol off of a drop of a dime, especially if I'm like on flights. I could smell people that are behind me.
Me too.
And I'm like, damn.
Me too. It makes me sick sometimes. It does. I'm like, whoa. Me too. Even certain drinks that aren't even alcohol, I'm like, these are alcohol in this? Because it's just giving me flashbacks of something that...
Sometimes people at the gym just put them putting on the hand sanitizer and they come fucking stand next to me and I'm like, really? I'll think for a second. Sure. I'll be like, you've been drinking?
Yeah.
Dude, I used to buy a fifth of vodka and like, I used to buy a fifth of vodka. It was called, what was it called? Dang it. Crystal Palace. It was like so cheap. I'd get that and like a big chaser. I think it would come out to like $4.32.
Oh yeah.
Dude, that orange soda pop I used to chase with, dude, I don't even ever want to smell that ever again in my entire life.
For sure.
Because it just, it's so, it was always compared with the vodka.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it gives me goosebumps. Like, it makes me feel gross. It's disgusting, you know?
So I want to ask a couple more things because you're kind of crushing it on Instagram and you're funny and your cooking videos are good.
Yeah,
I've been checking all that shit out. Even your Costco trip.
Yeah,
He's doing all the shit. You know, all the like. It's blowing up. What made you get into that?
So, I was in the trades. You know, Local 12. I had just been. I'm seeing like everyone do this stuff on Instagram, and some are legit. You know, they're like legit guys. Like, and they're making change, and they're doing good, and they live a lifestyle. But a lot of it was kind of fake and phony. And I was like. Dude, these people are like selling a life that I've been living like myself for a while, you know? Yeah. Like, dude, I'll work 100 hours a week. I prep my food. I still hit the gym. Sometimes I couldn't hit the gym because I worked like 46 hours straight, you know? But I've just been like living this life of like what a lot of people were like promoting, and I don't know if they were really all about it, you know? So
frauds.
Yeah, kind of. And it just I was kind of like, dude, how are they I'm working so hard right now and like all they're doing is posting the way I live.
Yeah.
You know, like food prep, work hard, wake up early, train hard, love your family, like all this stuff. And I'm like, bro, that's who I am.
Yeah.
Like I told my wife, like, should I just like start posting stuff and like do this, you know? Yeah. So started posting stuff in like December. And
this past December?
Yeah. I had like 1,000 followers.
December meaning like
2023.
Like the one that passed.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had
like
he's blowing up. He's blowing up like the Hopeaholics.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I had 1,000 followers on Instagram probably. I just used Instagram for UFC and surfing.
Oh, okay.
And politics at the time. Yeah. So, and then, yeah, I started seeing all this like fitness stuff, and you know, I've always loved training, dude. I've always been that guy, like walk into the gym, I could put everything together, whatever program, kind of everyone we always trained with, I'd always kind of take lead, and I just enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Like I was an artistic kid. To me, it's like a different way of doing art. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, how do you hit the body parts and like do everything right? And then in order and a groove to where you just kind of get like the best pump and everything just kind of runs smooth. So yeah, I was like, you know, I was telling my wife, I'm like, I kind of want to see if I could do this, you know, and reached out to a buddy of mine, my boy Brad, Reliant Fitness. Like he was a firefighter and he got sober and turned his life around. Just epic story, you know, and he's killing it. And I was like, just talking to him, I'm like, bro, I'm burnt out. Like, I don't see the most I've ever worked my entire life was last year. And it was great, like financially and stuff, but I didn't see my kids or my wife at all. And it was hard on us, you know, like get home and then get a phone call and I'd look at her and she'd be like, don't. I'm like, I have to. Mm-hmm. And she'd be crying. Like, it was hard. Like, I just wasn't around. And I'm like, and I fell into that trade because we started a family at 20 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I always felt like I was meant to do more. But God has a plan for me, dude. Yeah. And that's like kind of how it was. I had to go through like all this test and trials and challenges, and I had to like prevail through them, and it built me who I am. Like, it's crazy because when people struggle, it sucks. But that growth is always within the process, dude. And it builds you to who 100%. You are. And so I just started like, I would like, honestly, even before like this past year when I started, like I hit the sauna every night. I'm super big on the sauna. I love it. Like sauna, ice bath stuff, I'm about it. I've been doing that for years. And I would just like manifest in the sauna. Where do I see my life? What do I want to do? Talk to God a little bit, kind of just go over everything. And the whole fitness thing, and I've always wanted to do it, but I see other guys in fitness. Like when we're at the Arnold, I'm like, where do I fit in? These dudes are fucking huge. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are monsters, but I don't think a lot of people can't relate to that.
Yeah.
You know, not
most like, people don't want to be a monster.
Most
like
people
that.
Don't want to weigh like 320 pounds.
No, and yeah, that's exactly. Actually unhealthy.
It is. And that's like going to the Arnold made me feel gross. Yeah. Like, it was like, this is, I'm so about like health. When you go there, even like all these supplements and like all this
like
stuff.
The unhealthiest
well, the supplements. Like, oh man, bro, the fucking ingredients.
Yeah, here's 30 grams of protein loaded with a bunch of cancer feeders. You know what I mean? Like, thanks, dude. I'm good. So like, my wife was like, dude, she just supported me. She's my freaking number one, dude, in everything in life. We talk about everything. We discuss it. I wanted her to do it because she's like dude, like she found fitness after sobriety and crazy transformation, and she just kills it. And she was coaching and doing all this stuff. So I was like, dude, you should do this. Like, people relate to you and you're inspiring. She's like, I just want to be home with the girls right now. Like, I'm enjoying what we have. I'm like, cool. She's like, you should do it. So that's, we started posting stuff, and I just kept it real, dude. I think that's where people like on social media fail, is they try to be somebody else. And you can't be somebody be else authentic. All the time.
Authentic. You know? Have to be your authentic.
You
got to
be yourself.
Self. Yeah. And you have a thing too, because like I like watching you because you are your authentic self, and you talk how you how you talk on Instagram is how you talk everywhere.
Yeah.
And you're funny, and you say he says dude a lot.
Yeah, I say dude, bro, whatever. Dude, my chick's bro. Like, you should stop. Like, my wife's like, you should stop saying that. Like, people think you only talk to dudes. I'm like, well, everybody. I call everyone big dog.
Yeah, me too. I do big dog. Big dog. I do dude, but you're Huntington Beach.
Yeah, I dropped big dog to some chick in the liquor store not too long ago. She's all big dog. I'm like, it's nothing like that. Like, I just say
you're not. And then, you're not overweight.
Yeah, yeah, and. You know, so I didn't know where it was going to go. I'm like, I'm going to do online coaching, dude. I've been putting together programs for people forever.
Yeah.
People didn't appreciate it as much because it was free, know, and they don't like when you're not invested in yourself, it just doesn't carry value.
It's so true.
So I started to put that out there. And honestly, like, I think I started this in December. The end of December, like New Year's Eve, dude, things just started taking off. Oh, I would have
super smart to start it then, though. New year, new me.
Yeah.
You know, people are searching for something, a program or trying to make a change of some sort, you know?
Yeah. And I would have had no, I think I had like a plan in my head, like maybe in a year I could probably do this full time. Dude, it happened in like 30 days.
Nice.
Damn. Yeah. And it was wild. I've grown so much as a person from it. Like everything we're doing right now, just connecting and talking, like a lot I put, and that's why, dude, another thing, like just being authentic. I just try to put myself out there on who I am. I'm going to get some hate for it. It's sure. Cool. I don't care. I'm not looking to change those lives that are looking for the negative. Yeah, yeah, there's always going to be that guy that hits you up and he needed to hear what you had to say.
Yeah.
And I have these like, I've just grown, like it's so crazy because growing up, like what a man is, dude, you know, like you think this tough, not like, no, like being a man is being like vulnerable, and yeah, that takes courage, dude. Like having, being an open book and being vulnerable and getting personal and letting people know like what has torn you down, but you built yourself back up and came back from it. Like the coolest part with training and the online coaching thing for me and Instagram in general has just been the level of connecting and yeah, the conversations that I've had, like these true authentic conversations. I've had conversations with people that don't even like sign up with me or do anything with me. And I'm like, God wanted us to talk.
Yeah.
You know, I broke down on the phone one day, like, oh, this guy was telling me like, dude, my life is flying by me and I see it and I'm stuck and everything's going super fast. But like where I'm at, feel like I'm in like, I'm just in glue. And man, I you know, he's like, I went through a loss and this and that. And I'm like, dude, and he was drinking and his wife was like the total opposite. She was like diving into health and finding positive things and he couldn't find his way. I told him the story, like this is just on a consultation call. Never met him. I know very little about him, just like his age, weight, like he wanted change, didn't I do it? I told him the story about like my old man. And he was like, dude, I lost my kid. And he's like, we were meant to talk, you know? And it was like, I just cried. I couldn't even hold it. Like, I knew what he was going through. And it's those conversations, those last, that feeling. Like, I loved my job before. I loved, like, the cranes, and I was working with best friends, and it was fun. But I was lacking fulfillment.
Sure.
And this is, like, success is going to be different for everybody. I think success for me is just feeling fulfilled. And that's like that's what that like this connection and being in people's lives and like playing a positive role in them. Like I feel it every day and I'm blessed and I'm honored and I freaking am so grateful. And it's what you guys are doing here. You know, like you said, you'll know when we're done, we fucking took over the world. And you know, and you that like you get, you see, you read those comments, you're seeing what you're doing. And I know the feedback, you're getting a sense of fulfillment from what you guys are doing in here. And it gives you the energy to fight every day, you know, and it's fucking rad. And that's what's been so special. And that's what has made me so grateful for what I'm doing. And I knew when I started to have those conversations and I felt that feeling for the first time of real fulfillment, I knew I was on track. I had never felt like that before, you know? So I was like, this is it. This is where I'm meant to be. This is like things falling into place again. God's done this for me in the past and I'm going to listen to him. Mm-hmm. So like, I just started diving into it. And like you said, like my little personality stuff, I got two girls, dude. Like I'll be serious and man up when I need to be and be that guy. But no, like majority of the time I'm talking like
dancing. Who's filming when you're doing all
that? My wife.
Oh, she's yeah. Amazing. Okay.
She's full operations of everything in my life, dude. Nice. Like I would be lost without her, especially with this. Like she's all organized and everything else. And I'm like, yeah, bro, I'll call you back. Forget. Like,
yeah, dude, you're spot on. That's me with my husband. I'm like the face definitely that runs the place. He's the one that makes the wheels. Like,
He's actually the one that runs the place.
Yeah.
The face that runs the place.
Yeah.
He's actually in the background.
Yeah. My wife is full CEO. And
he doesn't mind being in the spotlight, but I think he prefers
not to be. Yeah. I mean, but yeah.
Whereas I don't feel like my wife likes the spotlight.
No, she just don't.
Like she doesn't like, I'm actually going to force her. Cause we haven't podcasted ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yet. Well, that's a lie. She was a guest on her podcast. That's how we scored.
Yeah.
Well, no, but I totally related to what you were saying because like the fulfillment and like purpose and things of that nature is what I felt when I joined the Hopeaholics and the Infinity Group and the treatment centers here and what we're doing is exactly what you said. Like, I've done really cool things in my life that mm-hmm. I'm totally, like, proud of.
Yeah, 100%.
And especially from where I started to, you know, what I've navigated through. But I just was, like, always chasing, always searching, always, like, wanting more of some sort. But I didn't know what that really was mm-hmm. until I walked through an opportunity that God presented to me. And then I met these two knuckleheads. And it was like literally the first time that we met, it was like,
we were brother and sister.
Already,
yeah.
We've been here grown forever. Up
forever.
Yeah. It was wild.
It's that connecting.
It is. It's you so know? Nuts.
Like if you watch our podcast, it's like, you wouldn't even know that we didn't even know each other. We met just like you did.
Yeah.
Walked in. I don't even know how much I watched her on Instagram before. Did you, Shane?
I don't think you did.
I did not.
I just knew that she wrestled in the WWE, and I knew my wife knew who she was because mm-hmm. my wife used to watch Total Divas. And other than that,
yeah,
I didn't know.
And that's like opportunities arise, and then you make these relationships.
Being aware,
yeah,
and having your eyes open, your ears,
yeah,
like, you're open to God,
and you're opening up to God. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
That's why I totally related to what you were saying because. Like I love it. Like yeah. I don't even live in California anymore, but I'm back in California.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I love it. Like yeah. This isn't like my husband's in Texas, like he'll come out, but
he's coming that's out how when I you're know, leaving.
I know. That's how I know that I'm doing something because I love it so much.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like hearing stories like yours, your wives, like that's what it's about in the sense of I want people to know, especially younger ones, like if you're struggling, if you're in depression, in pain or whatever little things that are going through, like especially, you know, substance, you're not alone. No. I was right there with you, but I battle through it, and it's a daily thing. Mm-hmm. It's a daily struggle. This shit ain't going away. Mm-hmm. I'm still stuck with my crazy ass yeah. brain, you know, and my thoughts get me into bad things, so I need to make sure that I'm self-disciplined and stay on the path. But it's like sobriety is cool.
Yeah.
Health is cool.
Yeah.
Like having your little disciplines is dope.
It
is. Like, and I think why I'm so like mind, body, soul is because what happens, especially when it comes to gym, because working out has always been something that has just been a part of me and my like family's life. You're starting these little daily habits, these daily disciplines that you might not see or you might not see the benefits of anything, whether it's like reading, journaling, going to a meeting, going to the gym or going on a walk. I always say with people that have never touched the gym, it's like, oh, I don't know where to start. I'm like, just walk, just hit 10,000 steps
yeah.
and go outside. That's
move.
It.
Move,
you know, move your body. But what it does is without you knowing it, all of a sudden is instilling like these little, self-esteem and confidence within mm-hmm. yourself that you don't realize, and then all of a sudden when it's time, then all of you're ready
yeah.
you're walking with your shoulders back totally a little bit. Like you're more secure in yourself
and you built yourself up totally. You weren't even knowing, dude, and yes. you're prepping because life is gonna come yeah. at you, dude.
Yes.
David Goggins,
and that's what
says
people
it best,
don't know
man. David Goggins says it best, man. He says he's training to callous his mind.
I love him.
For me too.
Yeah.
But he gets me injured because
no, like, I love
yeah,
him.
He's too gnarly.
I know.
Yeah,
but
callousing your
him.
Mind is like probably one of the dopest quotes I yes. ever, you know.
He
it
says
is. Your
that.
Mind is everything.
He's yeah. like, "Well, what happens when I get that phone call that my mom's dead?"
Yeah.
He's like, "I'm ready for it." You know? I know that sounds like horrible.
But he'll run like anyone like him. Like you listen to what that guy's been through. Dude, I've listened to David Goggins. So my shoulder's been bugging me. Yeah. I'm not working like in the trades and I'm not surfing because my shoulder's bugging me. I'm like, yada, yada, yada. I'm like not burning as many calories. Yeah. So I'm like, dude, I just want to start. I need to start doing cardio. I hate cardio. I've never had to do it my entire life. I could always just work out, be super lean, solid. But I'm like, I need a new challenge, you know, because there's things that I can't do. I want new challenges. Stairmaster for me, like
yeah.
dude, that thing
that's
sucks.
That's his thing.
Yeah,
and I just started doing it. Like,
yeah,
I just started like a month ago.
Yeah,
so, dude, I'm telling you, the first 15 minutes, I want to quit yeah. so bad, and no one will know. I could walk off that thing. And no one knew Goggins I quit.
In your brain, dude, and you're like, don't
I'll put bitch. David Goggins on. Like, I'll just listen to him. And yeah. then I'm like, it's so crazy because it's so true. Like, the first few times I struggled so hard. Yeah. This is like such a small thing, like you were saying, like just a little habit yeah. to build up. But I wouldn't let myself quit. I always set a goal to 200 floors. So then it was like a week went by. All of a sudden, it wasn't as hard. Mm-hmm. You know, I was getting to that first 15, 20 minutes easier. And then it was like, where do I need to take my mind? I don't want to do 200 floors. I want to do 300 floors mm-hmm. or 400 floors. Dude, I would picture my kids at like on the top of a building and I got to fucking get yeah. to them. Like, they're calling my name.
Totally.
Like, take your mind to whatever place you need wherever to take it. Go. To get the job done.
Yeah, you know? Feel that pain. You don't feel that pain in your legs. Dude, 200 floors is actually quite a bit.
It is.
It's 300 and 400.
Yeah.
Like,
but that's gnar. Like, that's one of those things where your brain's always going to, dude, it could work so hard against you. Oh, it could definitely work for you, but it could play a major factor.
It can, yeah, I can do the exact opposite. But like, at 50 years old now, I was like 49. And I put David Goggins on and I was on the treadmill and I was going for my best try ever. This was my world, Chad's world record. Mm-hmm. at running for 40 minutes and it was for distance.
Oh, that's pretty gnarly.
And I was way out on my pace. I mean, I was crushing it and I had 10 minutes left and I was going to smash it, and I had David Goggins on my headphones, and I was just going, and I was running, and all of a sudden I feel this, this burn right yeah. across my abdominal right here,
yeah.
and I was like, "Fuck, that's not good." but David Goggins was yeah. on, and like he was talking about this one training ultra that he ran, and his fucking ass was bleeding. He was yeah, talking about yeah. his ass
yeah.
bleeding.
Yeah, I remember like, listening to that.
Dude, this is nothing. My ass isn't bleeding. So I just fucking kept going. And yeah. I knew I was injured, but yeah. it didn't hurt because I was so...
Endorphins
were pumping, and I was hot, and man, I was out of the gym for 4 months.
But you, like...
I crushed my time, though.
That's the extreme, and like...
And that's when you were an idiot.
Like, David Goggins put himself in the hospital like he yeah. did doing that, but what he said is he doesn't regret it because he proved to himself how, like, strong his mental state was, and, like, what people don't realize, like, dude, it's so simple, like, the smallest things.
Totally.
Wake up a little earlier.
I know.
You know, go for a walk. Maybe go for a jog. Maybe just walk in a gym. Maybe just do some push-ups. Like, these tiny, tiny, tiny little things aren't tiny at all.
No.
And you're like, you have to do them, and you do them every day and just try to improve a little bit every day, and you're building yourself up. And it's crazy because what you notice, and in the beginning it sucks because it's all hard. Like, yes. Everything's hard. Yeah. You're like, God, this is, how did yeah. I let myself get here? Yeah. This is so hard. And then a week goes by and 2 weeks goes by, and all of a sudden you're not doing 5 push-ups, you're doing 15, and you're doing them consistently, and you're getting stronger. And like, the thing is like, the mental strength is great and like your physical appearance is cool, mm-hmm. but bro, it's the mind. Mm-hmm. And you start to realize, like, the one thing I've learned the most in this past year is like, you could do fucking anything you want. Mm-hmm. If you are determined and willing
to
do it, you know,
all you have to do is set your mind to it and not give up no matter what. Like, people always give up, and they say this is a saying I stole from Narcotics Anonymous is where I heard it the very first time. Don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happened. And that means in anything in life, mm-hmm. you know, some business, sometimes people, it can get really, really tough mm-hmm. right before things are great.
Yeah.
It can get really, really dark, or you could be like, I'm almost out of money. Yeah. I got to keep going. And then yeah. people are like, fuck it, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
They can't handle the pressure. But that's why I think it's so important to have the whole physical fitness aspect, because we've already trained our mind mm-hmm. to push and keep going no matter what.
When you build your body to a point where you are in shape, you realize it took work and you're capable of doing it. And you could keep going, you know, and it's cool. Like what you were just saying, like another thing too, is like, be aware of who you're talking to and who you let in your circle. Cause people are going to want to see you fail, and people break you down. And you, like, something I always loved about like Conor McGregor, like, he seems super cocky, but the guy believed in himself. you know? And that self-belief to me, it was always so inspiring. Like, he would say exactly what he was going to do. And it wasn't, I don't think people realized, like, he wasn't trying to be cocky. Like, he's saying that out loud because he's putting that energy out there. Sure. And he believes in himself. And I would do that, like, in the sauna at night. Like, where do I want to be in a year from now? Or what do I want to, where do I want to be next month? What do I want to do? Dude, I would have to say it out loud, because if I didn't, like, I could bury that thought.
Sure.
You know, like, I couldn't, I never said it out loud. So I'm not disappointing myself when I didn't execute. And I started, like, verbalizing my thoughts, you know, and whether I was alone or with my wife or whatever, I'm in the sauna, by verbalizing them, I'm hearing myself and I'm like, I can't let myself down. You know, it's like that little thing of, like, those little things, those little tasks totally. You build up, you could skip doing them and people won't know, but you will. Yes. And then you got to live with that. And when you let yourself down,
yes,
you're losing respect for yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, you're depreciating who you are. Mm-hmm. Like, don't let yourself down, because if you're letting yourself down, you're going to let your kids down. You're going to let your wife down. You're going to let your friends down. And that's what I love. Like, that's really where the fitness thing for me is. Like, I talk to these guys and they're just kind of lost, and girls, like, and like a lot of my clients, really just like bringing structure into their lives and putting that confidence back in them and instilling, like, dude, you're not alone. Like, no one's alone.
We all feel that way.
Yeah.
Totally.
I feel that way. Oh, you know,
sure. Like, it's just like that a we've, daily work,
yeah.
We've know? Created a discipline. Like, I have a discipline. Like, I get up at 3 a.m. in the morning. And like I go to the gym. And not at 3. I do my prayers and meditation.
Yeah.
But how does it go again, Shane?
I get up at 3 a.m., do my gym, do my meditation, prayers and meditations, breakfast by 4, hit the gym 4:30. I'm back home by 7. I kiss my kids and I go to work for 13 hours.
Yeah.
And I do the same thing every day after day after day after day, year after year after year. And look at me, my pillar community. Pillar.
I love it. That sounds really boring, Shane.
That structure and routine works, though.
It does, structure. Man. I need structure.
Everybody does.
Yeah. Dude, without structure, I'm lost.
Right?
Too much free time, I'm lost.
Me too.
All of a sudden, if I have too much free time, I'm getting nothing done.
Dude, it's crazy. Like, my husband loves it when I'm like booked and busy.
Yeah.
Because
I operate better.
I do.
Yeah.
Even if it's like overwhelming and like there's so much stuff that has to get done, I operate way better than if I have so much free time. I'm like,
yeah.
There's a saying and I love it. You can't become successful if you can't operate in chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to operate in chaos. And having a full schedule can be very chaotic and busy, and it can feel that way. But that's what successful people do.
And your whole life is prepping you for that. Yeah. Like, I looked back, like, I seen these people that were, whether it was doing the fitness thing or whatever, and people were like, because I would have guys jam me up, like, why aren't you doing this yet? And, you know, you look back and you go, man, I could have been doing this like 10 years ago, but dude, no, I wasn't ready 10
you
years.
Listen, it no. This prepared, you were prepared.
Everything.
This is your time.
Yeah. Like, from the struggles in my marriage to the stuff at work, like truck train, like local 12, it is fucking chaos all day, every day.
Yeah.
Nothing goes right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like getting the crane ready and then you're dealing with like the biggest piece of equipment allowed in California on the 405, dude. Yeah. And then you got 8 guys with you hauling loads that are sketchy. And then you get to the job and dude, nothing is ever going to just go perfectly smooth. And like learning how to deal with that chaos, learning how to deal with all these other personalities, dude, I would always try to be like the positive guy too, because it's like, man, he's going to be fucking pissed and he's pissed. Mm-hmm. We're all going to be here, bro, for like 20 hours. I want to like try to enjoy it, you know? So like everything life throws at you, like just take it in, like learn from it. Like it's going to help you at some point. For sure. And like people don't see that, you know, like some dude hit me up on, it's funny, like for the first time ever, my wife was like reading through like Instagram comments. Dude, those are awesome. Like I'm wearing a American Blue Collar shirt, my buddy's company. And this dude's talking shit like, you're an influencer, bro. You don't know nothing about American Blue Collar. I'm like, dude, I've been doing this for like 15 years. I've literally have sacrificed everything, like blood, sweat, and tears in those trades, you know? Like,
did anybody respond?
Yeah, I think my wife did. I think she was like, said something back to him. I try to not engage. Yeah,
I don't engage.
Yeah.
My 15-year-old daughter does, though.
That's awesome.
She'll engage if people say negative stuff about us.
Good. Yeah.
So shout out to Gia, because she actually sounds
legit. Just,
and yeah, and people that don't know that she is, I'm like, when I'm reading her responses, I'm like, damn, you just got played by a 15-year-old. Mm-hmm.
I just skip over them because they say stupid stuff sometimes. Like, you know, Natalie needs to eat a sandwich. Or,
I love that one, though.
That's funny shit, though. Oh, dude, this was a great fucking podcast, man.
And congratulations, dude. Like, seriously, I love that, especially just because when it comes to marriage, right, it's like, that is a beautiful, sacred thing. And mm-hmm. for you guys to have to go through the trials and tribulations of active addiction together and go through the fire and come out on the other end, that's rad.
Because
that's a story that's a lot of work. You know, it takes a lot of work by you both individually and then as a unit and as a team. And I love that because I think there's nothing better than having your ride or die riding this life together.
Oh, 100%. Like, I look back and it's crazy. Like, I'm just so thankful for her. I'm so thankful for the people that supported me and like supported us. And, you know, God's at the foundation of all that. And it's just, it's been such a blessing. And like the life that we have now, and just like, man, getting to see my little girls every day. And mm-hmm. we're right now is so cool. Like, I love what you guys are doing. I love like just everything with the movement, with health, like having like these younger kids know like health, like my daughter just started working out with us. Like it's awesome. Just everything. Like, lead from the front, dude. Yep. Set the example, set the bar high. And just being vulnerable and being willing to share like everyone's stories, like you guys sharing stories. And I hope some of the younger guns out there like listening and they see some stuff and they know like it is cool to be sober, like you said, you know. Mm-hmm. It's more than cool. It's a freaking blessing, and it's going to promote longevity and health in our lives. And man, before you know it, you're doing it for you, and then all of a sudden you're helping everyone else. Mm-hmm. And that's what just keeps us in the game. You know what I mean? Like you said, like you're fighting to the fucking end, and I just love that. You know, there's nothing that could freaking break you down because you have that fire inside. And it's that fire stays lit because people respond and people are hearing like the people on your podcast, and it's moving and it's touching, and it's something that we all really need to stick together on.
For sure.
Because there is a huge problem going on. Yeah. And I think we should be loud. I think we should freaking be super loud, cause chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make it hard for them to thrive.
We know how to do.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Us together. I mean, I always say they really didn't know who they were fucking with
when
they took my fucking son-in-law from me.
Yeah.
You know, they I'm relentless. I don't give a fuck. Like I already had my life. My life. This is what we're doing now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as everything else, I'd already done that.
Yeah. Our life's for our kids. And when you start fucking with our kids, you better watch out. Yeah,
you better watch out, man. You know, and they forgot too that like, I agree with you. I want to just say, I agree with you that they're leaving the fentanyl out there on the streets for whatever reason it is. Yeah. I don't know it and it's not really for me to worry about. My movement is about getting it off the streets.
Yep.
They didn't realize that guys like people like us, we all can come together regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, lack of religion. It doesn't really matter. We're all coming together with a common bond to help each other get better and live a happier. What was it again? Happier,
more fulfilled,
happier
life.
And more fulfilled life. You know, that's and it. We can do that. And they've been sitting up there in Washington, to be a tiny bit political, dividing us for the last eight plus years.
Yeah.
Or more probably. I just really got into politics a little bit like in 2016.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the whole world did.
The thing is they're supposed to work for us.
That's exactly what they work for us. We don't work for them. Like, we're not their little bitches.
Service workers.
Yeah. We don't have to. We don't have to agree on everything politically. That's fine. No. But we should be. We the people.
Shane knows that one. What is the first three words? We're different individuals, dude.
That's the whole point of being in America.
It's okay to have different perspectives and different views, but it should still be about we the people, and they should be working for us. And that's not the case anymore.
No,
you know.
And that's how they did it. I see by design. Yeah. Like, I see it from both sides. I know that both sides came together and said, we're going to divide.
Yeah.
It's a good thing for us. Makes us more powerful.
Yeah.
When we have a divided nation.
Yeah, divide and conquer.
Yeah.
Divide and conquer.
Episode 2, Jimmy Queen Detective. We will dive.
Exactly.
We will dive deeper into Washington, D.C.
Yeah, because I've gone down that rabbit hole, dude. Sure.
All right, man. Good. Thanks so much for coming on and hanging with us.
Thanks for having me. It was fun. Awesome. Blast. Yeah.